Welcome to the podcast service of Sydney's FM 103.2, available on the web at fm1032.com.au.
Well, to many people, former AFL star David Schwartz appears invincible, and at 195 centimetres tall and 105 kilograms, it's probably not surprising. But the Ox, as he's known, took a massive step a couple of years ago, admitting that he had a 15-year-old gambling problem. And he joins us now. David, welcome to Open House.
No, thank you for having me. 105 kilos is very generous. I've blown out a little bit since then, but got to 120 at one stage, so
it's all right.
Slowly fighting it.
And what are you now?
About 111.
Okay. Well, you're moving in the south direction.
Which is always good.
You retired from the Melbourne Demons in 2003. To you, what were the highlights of your career?
Look, obviously the 2000 grand final was fantastic. The game that sticks in my mind would be my first game in 1991 against West Coast. And I guess that always sticks in your mind because you've worked so hard to get to that goal that you've been trying to achieve for so long. So my first game was certainly important. My comeback games after my knee reconstructions were also pretty valuable in getting over, I guess, hurdles or milestones and setting goals once again and finally realising those. So many people had written me off, and it was always good to show people that, hang on a minute, don't write me off yet, I've still got plenty of football left in me.
Now, 4 years down the track from your quote-unquote retirement, I know you're doing a bit of broadcasting here and there. What else are you doing with your time?
Yeah, look, I've got a really busy schedule at the moment. Channel 7 on Fridays and Sundays, so calling with Dennis and Bruce, Tim Watson and Ricky Laurentia. I do the run home on SCN. I was doing that with Anthony Hudson for the last 2 years, but now Francis Leach is involved. So I do that on a daily basis, 4 to 7. And I've just signed a deal with Bruce Matheson, which is doing all his responsible gaming at all his venues. So I'm rather busy.
Sounds like it. All those time management skills you've got to learn when you're a sports star, they're certainly coming into play now.
Yeah, well, it teaches you to be punctual. I've got a young family as well. I've got a six-week-old and a two-year-old. So just getting enough quality family time and obviously fitting in all the work is, you know, you just got to be prepared. And as you said, time management is the key.
Mm. Well, when it comes to the issue of gambling, how did gambling become such a big part of your life then?
A funny thing. My father, who was murdered when I was eight, he'd lost everything to gambling. And I remember Mum telling us in no detail, and being eight, you don't really understand what the pundi's all about, but she said, you know, Dad lost a lot of money. You know, we should have had a lot more money, and kind of blamed him for a lot of issues that were going on in our lives just after Dad had died. And so I thought the punt would be the furthest thing, you know, from my life. And I started umpiring basketball at the age of 12, and I collected golf balls. So I always had a lot of money for a young kid. I was probably earning maybe $100, $150 a week, which was, you know, pretty decent money. And at the age of 14, I went to a card game, just fives and 10-cent pieces, and it grew from there. And then I went to the trots one day at the age of 15, I think it was, and I won $60, came home, put it on the table and said, Mum, have a look at that. And I could see the pain and the fear and the hurt in her eyes. She almost saying, gee, I hope we don't have to go through what we went through with Dad. So that still is burning my memory, that I came home at the age of 15 and Mum looking at me saying, what are you doing? How dare you do this? I didn't understand it, though, and punted every day of my life up until May the 3rd, 2005.
Wow. And so that look from your mum wasn't enough to deter you?
No, it wasn't. I guess being 15 and puberty setting in and being the man of the house, and I was probably I was playing under 19 football at this stage, so I was 6'4". I was big. I could. I thought that what I, as all young men do, they think they know everything, and you're invincible. So yeah, I just became a punter. I just started betting on the horses, and then the introduction to the casino kind of, I guess, fueled that even further, because I could then bet it, you know, on blackjack and poker and roulette, and the poker machines came in. So. But just got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then in 1994 I earned $32,000, and in 1995 I earned $400,000. So all of a sudden your bets go from $5 and $10 out to $5 and $10,000. I got in and I couldn't get out.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
If I may ask, do you know how much money you did actually lose through gambling?
Well, it's a hard question, but it shouldn't be, because I know what I earned, and I know what I've got. But then you've got all your living expenses, and I went overseas twice a year, you know, at the end of the footy season. I reckon conservatively a couple of mil.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple of mil. A couple of mil, and that includes a $600,000 6-week win that I had. I won 600 grand in 6 weeks.
Yeah. And, David, when it comes to the actual addiction part of it, is it just the thrill of the win, the fact that the win could be around the corner? What is the addictive aspect of it?
I think the whole lifestyle. I think it's hanging out with those people and understanding that, you know, money's no object and that you can borrow money at times. It's like a family that you get involved with. It's routine. You're in the same routine, and for me that was familiar, and I like routine. I like to know where I'm going to be on a Saturday, and I knew that I was going to be at the races, or I knew I was going to be in the tab, and you saw the same old people, and it became familiar to me. So it's a real addictive thought process more than the action itself. The winning was okay, but I was winning. I'd win money, and it would mean nothing. I'd lose money, and it'd mean a lot, but I lost reality of between the wins and the losses, which was a real bummer. If I won 10 grand, I'd be thinking, all right, that can pay off people. No, it can't. What I'll do is I'll put it in my phone account and I'll bet it again. So you never got to pay back the people that you really wanted to.
Yeah. Former AFL star David Schwartz is with us now. We're talking about gambling and his personal experience of going through that. David, so here you are. You're sitting in the casinos. I mean, weren't you recognised by people, or was that not really an issue for the public to see David Schwartz in the casino betting all this money?
No, I was upstairs. I was in the mahogany room, so everybody up there, was up there for a reason, and that was the punt. And no one cared about what anyone else was doing. And along the way, you hear a lot of stories about, you know, people that have been involved with fraud, and you know that had bet in the mahogany room. And look, they treated you well up there. It's like a club you belong to, and if you need money, you borrow it. If you need lunch or dinner, they pay for it. They pay for your parking. They really make you feel like a part of them. So,
and it all makes the habit even that much harder to kick.
Yeah, and they give you tickets to the races, and you know, you get to go into all the good boxes. So, look, I wasn't worried about what people thought. I really didn't, and I've never worried about what people think. I do things my way, and if people don't like it, well, bad luck. And I know it's a shocking attitude to have, but it's one I've always had. And I think since I've finished punting, my attitude has certainly changed.
Yeah. Now, how did you do that? How did you finish punting? How did you break the addiction?
Yeah, it's not easy. After probably 7 or 8 failed attempts, the one thing about being a punter, you understand dates and you understand numbers. And I actually remember more about the punt during my footy days than my footy, which is probably the saddest thing out of all my punting. But May the 3rd, 2003, I opened up a bar in Toorak, and I had the opening night, and a lady walked through the door, and I thought, gee, she's not bad. You know, I haven't seen her before, and so I introduced myself, and we started talking. She was living in the States at the time. Anyway, we got to know each other. That was the trigger. I met a lady that actually cared for me, and not for because I played footy or because I had, you know, I was able to live a pretty high-flying lifestyle. She liked me for me, which was
right.
A rarity. So she moved in, and she didn't realise what she was walking into. She was actually walking into a whirlwind where she wasn't sure what was happening, or you know what I was about.
So she didn't know about the addiction?
No idea.
No.
No idea. So she said, "All right, time to be honest. Let's work this out. I know you like a punt." She said, "We've got this, and this. We need to sort it out." And I was in real trouble. I honestly was. I had a lot of money. I had well over $300,000 immediately. So, first thing she said, you've got to get back to work. You know, you've got to find a job. So get out there and get off your backside and do something. At this stage, I didn't have work, so I went out and got work, and which I didn't find hard to get. And I said, right, I'm off the punt. In the next 2 years, I had 4 bets. And they were 4 pretty big bets. In between that, we'd had a little son. And on my son's christening, I had my last bet, which was May the 3rd, 2005. And I haven't had a bet since. Now, the trigger for me was was that Karen said, if you don't be honest and you be upfront with me, I'm leaving. I'm out of here.
Right.
And I knew that this lady was the best thing that ever happened to me. She said, right, we'll get through this. I'll hold your hand and I will get you through. I just want two things. You admit that you've got a problem and you be honest with me. And I thought, well, if this lady's going to help me get my life back on track, the least I can do is do those two things. So I did. And we went through a lot of hurt. We went through a lot of heartache, a lot of fights. We probably did our relationship backwards, where we had all the hard times in the beginning, and now we're starting to see, you know, really good times, really happy times with two kids and so forth. So only 8 weeks ago, we paid off our final debt.
Okay, congratulations.
It took us 2 years. Still got the home loan. We cleaned up everybody. And what we did, we got on the phone to everybody I owed money to and anyone I'd let down, and we said, right, you will get your money back. I'll give you the commitment that I'll call you every month and I will either put money in your account or I will let you know when the money's coming, but I will call you. You don't have to call me, and that is a commitment I'll make to you. So I did that with everybody, and everybody was fine. And then we put some security measures in place.
Okay, what are those security measures? Because I'm sure that, like many people who have been addicted to something, they say they're not kind of fully recovered. They're never fully recovered. An alcoholic is always an alcoholic, they say. I could always fall tomorrow. So what have you put in place?
Really simple things. The newspaper, when it came for the first 6 months, Karen actually got the form guide and got the race results out. She took them out of the paper, so I'd read the paper.
Right.
That was one way of not, you know, having it in my face.
Yep.
Got rid of all the credit cards.
Yep.
They were gone. Got rid of all bank accounts, gone. Got rid of all TAB bank accounts, they were gone. Karen gave me an allowance, and that's what I got per week.
Yep.
And that's what I needed, and that was enough for petrol and enough to buy lunch. Then what we did was we got rid of my phone and my phone number, which means I had to get rid of all my punting friends, which was really hard because a lot of them I was close to, but it was either Karen or it was them. And I didn't wipe everybody. I just said, look, guys, I can't be involved with you because of punting. And if I see you down the street, I'm more than happy to talk, but our relationship was based on punting, so we'll have to stop. I went public with it, which put more pressure on me to obviously staff the punt, which a lot of people can't do that, but I was in the position where I could. And it was amazing how much support I got. When you admit to a weakness, it's amazing how many people will help you.
Yeah, and come around. So that person that's listening to us now, and they're just on the verge of maybe that one bet too many, you know, it might even be that one drink too many, by the way. It could be any kind of addiction. What advice would you give that to them tonight?
Put yourself, and this is how I looked at it, I put myself in my son's shoes. I remember seeing my dad be murdered, and I remember what it was like for me at that stage, being in my shoes, looking at him the way he was. I put myself in my son's shoes to see me sitting in a TAB, wasting hour after hour, putting money over the bench, when I could be down the park, I could be at home watching a DVD, I could be doing anything with him, and I put the TAB before him. Never ever again would I do that.
Wow.
And I look at it from his shoes, and I know it's pretty hard to understand, but I've got to get away from how I'm thinking. I think about how others think about me, and it's my family, because they rely on me to help them, so I've got to be doing the right thing by them.
Yeah, that's some great advice.
And also my mum, She did everything she could to give me the opportunities to play footy, to go to a private school. And I think in my 20s, I just really treated her poorly. And I can never have those times back, but I can certainly try and make things better.
Yeah, some great advice there. David, I'm not familiar with the story, but was your father's murder in relation to gambling as well?
Oh, not really. No, it was probably one of the other ones, adultery based, where he'd been involved with a married lady, and a very jealous husband didn't like it. Mum and dad had split up at the stage, and we were up on a fishing trip, and someone came in and shot him in the room, and the professional help I received was about that, and it also tied.
That was my next question,
which was. I didn't think I needed it. I thought, no, it's okay. I'm over it. It's 20 years ago. It happened when I was 8, 25 years ago. And the lady, and this was the best advice I ever got, the lady who I was seeing at the time, she said, well, you put your son in your shoes. And how do you think he would feel after seeing what you'd seen. And I thought, yeah, I think you'd be affected.
Mm.
And then she said, well, you are affected. You know, you've been through a lot and you probably don't realise it. And it's like a big onion that you put these layers and layers and layers over it, and you've got to get to the core of the problem, which is in the middle. So really good advice. I, as you said, tough and big and strong and all that. I thought I'd be the last person to see a psychologist, but went and saw one. And, gee, it's amazing how much anxiety was gone and how good I felt about myself.
Afterwards.
Yeah.
David, thanks for being so open and honest with us tonight. Really do appreciate it.
No, that's not a problem. If it can help someone out there, I hope it does, Mazel.
Yeah, well, it could well have been the catalyst tonight. Thanks so much for joining us on Open House tonight, David.
No problem.
We hope you enjoyed this FM 103.2 podcast. To listen to more great audio, visit fm1032.com.au.